Good Tuesday afternoon and welcome into the Fast Lane across the Virginia Talk Radio Network. Coronavirus meets sports. It is pretty much what we discuss often here on the Fast Lane, that we do try to provide some kind of element of relief, but it's inevitable that these stories will often just blend together. And the latest one today comes from North Carolina, where Governor Roy Cooper says the Coca-Cola 600 is on track to run May 24th. Of course, this coming after reports that May 17th is when NASCAR at Darlington will take place, and that's when the NASCAR Monster Energy Cup Series will return to action. Roy Cooper has elaborated, saying that NASCAR has, quote, submitted plans involving social distancing protocol, end quote, for Charlotte Motor Speedway. Presume that any event that's going to be held in the near future is going to be without fans. To me, that's almost a given. But you do get the blend right now of states that generally lean more conservative looking for ways to get back into action, and states that generally lean more liberal being more cautious in regards to that. And there's the obvious political element where ultimately you've got politicians that are acting in the best interest of what may get them reelected. But, you know, in theory, I agree with that, because if nothing else, that means they're listening to the people that put them in office and crafting plans that are most likely to carry out their best interests. Because, you know, again, if you want the full spectrum of political commentary, it's available on our sister stations, Virginia's Talk Station 100.9 FM, Lynchburg, the WIQO app, and Ask Alexa and Google Home Stream WIQO. But to me, based on things that I learned in, elementary school, that the point of elected officials is they are elected by the people to represent their best interest and to represent and act in a manner that reflects what those people that elected them ultimately want to happen. It's not their right as a politician to do what they want or what they think is best. It's their right to carry out the interest of their particular constituents. And if they do that, those constituents can vote to keep them in office. And if they don't do that, the constituents can vote to keep them out of or to have them removed from office. That's a republic. That's democracy in a nutshell. But we are seeing a clear line of politics and a political divide in action based upon what's taking place now, where states that generally lean more conservative are putting plans and protocols in place to try to get back to sporting events and actions and activities that could take place in the not so distant future. And if there's one element of irony to this right now in college athletics, it's got to be this for me. The fact that for the longest, or not in college athletics, in NASCAR, it's got to be the fact that, you know, 10, 15 years ago, NASCAR looked down upon the Deep South and the areas that had made NASCAR what it is. They cut one race out of Darlington and moved it from the coveted slot Labor Day weekend, the Southern 500. They also, and they actually moved it to Mother's Day weekend, with the thought being that they put it on a horrific weekend to capture attendance in an effort to try to say, oh, this track just doesn't draw the way that it used to. Let's move out of the South even more. And it actually backfired. It actually became a pretty well-renowned event, and eventually NASCAR wisened up and said, hey, let's go back to the Deep South. Let's go back to Darlington and put it back Labor Day weekend and at least restore some element of tradition. But they moved two races from Rockingham. There was talk that Martinsville could be on the chopping block. So it's not unfathomable to criticize NASCAR in this regard. But it's kind of amusing now, because now NASCAR, in essence, needs those states where it had the worst rocky relationship with their fan base, because those are the states that are most likely to create an environment where they could actually return to action. Because raise your hand, or just nod in agreement, if you really, sarcastic agreement, of course, if you honestly think that the races that are going to unfold at Watkins Glen in New York and Sonoma in California are as likely to take place as races that unfold in Texas, South Carolina, Alabama, North Carolina, Georgia, you can lump Virginia into that category, although we obviously, thanks to Northern Virginia, lean more to the left. But you know, you look at where sports are right now, NASCAR's in that very amusing spot, because now they need the South more than ever, and it's probably going to give them the best chance to continue running events as they're scheduled. More on that and more on the landscape of sports with Aaron McFarling, Roanoke.com columnist, presented by Trio and Jersey Lilies to-go menus around 5:10 today on the Fast Lane. But we do have time for the top five at five.
It's time for the top five at five. Five things you need to know right now. Number five.
We're going to go with some stories to start off. The ICYMI variety, in case you missed it over the weekend with the NFL draft. One of them being Matt Kenseth. He beats out Carl Edwards, who said he didn't have any interest returning to NASCAR, and ends up beating out Ross Chastain, whom Ganassi Racing says they still have big plans for, but obviously have not unveiled what those are. And he, along with Ryan Newman, not only going to return to the track when NASCAR gets back to action, but today they were also granted provisional waivers to be eligible for the NASCAR championship if they are able to finish inside the top 16 in the standings, or if they're able to win a race and clinch one of those at-large berths. But Matt Kenseth, the antithesis of Kyle Larson, who has been outspoken a number of times. Obviously, he had the inward slip-up. Matt Kenseth is about as safe, a line drive down the middle of the fairway as it gets.
Number four.
Danny Manning, out at Wake Forest. The question that I have regarding this is not necessarily why now, because there were the optics of getting rid of a coach when the coronavirus pandemic initially began, but it's twofold. Why even do it when you're in an era where most programs are starved for money? And yes, the ACC's projected revenue shortfall isn't as bad as expected, because for 2019-2020, and this is according to David Teal, columnist for the Richmond Times-Dispatch now, but 95% of the projected school income will actually be there. So it's only about $2 million off per school. But there's already the tension of what's going to happen with the upcoming college sports season and that landscape, and there's uncertainty surrounding it. $2 million shortfall is still a $2 million shortfall, and you couple it with the fact that Danny Manning had a buyout reportedly anywhere from $8 to $15 million. The timing of it is very peculiar, and of course, you're also at a program that has been bit hard by transfers and early NBA defections and needs a replenishment of talent, and now you have a restriction on being able to get a lot of the more than 750 grad transfers that are out there onto campus. Makes it a real challenging job. Dave Glenn, ACCSports.com and the ACC Sports Journal, is going to stop by with us later this week. He'll weigh in more on this, but the timing is peculiar, and just the decision in general as it relates to getting rid of Danny Manning at Wake Forest amid the coronavirus and amid the major buyout, given how cash-strapped so many of these colleges are. Now, Wake is a private institution, so they don't have to disclose their records to the public, but they also don't have the largest alumni base, and their student body is under 5,000. It is by far the smallest in the ACC. So, yes, they're a great school. They're capable of putting together very well-endowed alumni, but just a very peculiar decision given the overall landscape still of where we are in college athletics. Not saying Danny Manning didn't underachieve. I think he did. Just the timing is the head-scratcher.
Number three.
Trent Williams got dealt over the weekend from the Washington Redskins, and we all know that by now. We knew he was on the way out. We knew he was going to leave Washington. But the real intriguing element is it looked like the Redskins had a deal in place to send Williams to Minnesota. And then all of a sudden on Friday night, the Minnesota Vikings select Ezra Cleveland, offensive tackle, Boise State. And we're not going to break down the scouting profile of the Vikings' newest offensive tackle. But what we will say is at that moment you realized, okay, Trent Williams is now much less likely to go to Minnesota. What we didn't know at that time was that Trent Williams, basically, according to multiple credible news reporters, despite Williams saying, "I didn't veto the trade to Minnesota," we basically all know that he did, and that he wanted to go to San Francisco, and he forced his way out of D.C. and to San Francisco. Hey, great pickup for San Francisco and a great job by their mainstay at left tackle Joe Staley, waiting until after they were able to work the trade out for a fifth-round pick this past year and a third-round pick next year to pick up arguably the top left tackle in the NFL, one of the top three in the NFL, top five caliber left tackle for sure, and Trent Williams, and give his franchise as much leverage to operate. But if you're buying the Trent Williams decision to, you know, oh, I didn't force my way to San Francisco, I would have gone to Minnesota, nobody with any credibility is actually believing that.
Number two.
Tim Sands, Hokies president, projecting a revenue shortfall across the university for them. And you couple this with the June announcement that could come on the status of the fall semester for Virginia Tech. And, you know, I'm sure they'll act in the best interest of the overall student body and their welfare and health. But you do have to wonder if in a lot of cases a school like Virginia Tech, I don't think they will act on this, but I think they are with so many other schools in that you want to get back to on campus because there's more revenue, there's more housing, there's more student activity fees, there's more of an economic opportunity for these schools. And that's extremely imperative and important right now. And there's clearly a lack of funds that is plaguing a lot of schools, and Virginia Tech's in that particular category. They are not flush with cash like some of their other major revenue sport competitors are, and so you want to get back to campus as soon as possible. And of course, all else fails, you want to find a way to have a football season on the horizon. But it's not shocking that Virginia Tech waiting till June to announce the fall semester status. There's to a degree a drop dead date. I just believe at some point, whether it's Virginia Tech and maybe they go back to school, but other schools are much less equipped to do that, there will be a trickle-down effect, and it will impact the start of the 2020-2021 college athletic season.
And number one on the top five at five.
The ACC tournament is going to follow suit with the NFL draft. Over the weekend, the NFL announced the NFL draft in 2022 would go to Las Vegas. That's sandwiched in between Cleveland, this upcoming draft. They announced the dates April 29th, 30th, and May 1st and in 2021 in Cleveland, and then in Kansas City the year after that. And it's funny because there was a lot of talk that 2022 would be Green Bay and they'd move the draft there. And the NFL clearly ultimately wants to go there. I think the intimate setting of the draft was great, but obviously they have a chance to make more money elsewhere. We know the NFL, they're going to find any way to make as much money as possible. But the ACC following suit in that the Greensboro Coliseum will be the host of the 2023 ACC basketball tournament. And it's the next open date on the schedule for it. John Swofford had said last week in a column with David Teal, DailyPress.com, or former DailyPress.com columnist, now with the Richmond Times-Dispatch, that it was a sword to Greensboro when they had to pull the tournament out earlier. So you thought this might end up being in the works. But for everyone who loves the tournament to be in Greensboro, myself included, it is at least nice to see that it's not fully done being in that great city, but obviously it's going to have to wait a couple years before it returns there.
And there is your top five at five.
Now we transition over to our weekly chat with Roanoke Times columnist Aaron McFarling, presented by Trio and Jersey Lilies. Aaron, it's always our pleasure to chat with you here on the Fast Lane. The news at the ACC tournament will give Greensboro another shot, even though it's 3 years off. Does that warm your heart at all in an era where it has been cooled off quite a bit because of the coronavirus impacting sports?
Yeah, my daughter was asking me today, when are we going to get some good news in 2020? You know, and I think that's good news, the Greensboro thing. I like that. I like it a lot. Now, I'm a small town guy, and I think the history of Greensboro and the tournament together is worth preserving. You know, I sort of was not thrilled about the trips to Brooklyn. And I mean, D.C. was fine, I guess. I mean, it's kind of centrally located and all that. But I think Greensboro's perfect for it. And they're certainly owed something after what we went through this past March. And so I think it makes sense on a lot of levels. And, you know, I think it'd be nice if Greensboro stayed in the rotation, even if it was just an occasional once every 6 years type of thing. I think the city has a place with the tournament going forward forever, and it's nice to see. I mean, 3 years seems like a long time from now, you know, but it really isn't. I mean, it'll be here before we know it, and I'm glad to see it.
Yeah, I am too. I understand the other locations. You know, in a perfect world for me, it's in Charlotte most of the time. That just makes sense from a neutrality standpoint and accessibility for all the conference schools. But having Greensboro at least in the rotation warms the hearts of many, yourself included, Aaron. This is the time of year where we can speculate on a lot of this because there's not a lot of actual sports that are taking place. What's your dream scenario? I mean, what should the rotation be for the ACC tournament?
That's a good question. I hadn't thought too much about it until you asked it. So I'm not really sure I have a great answer, but I think that, yeah, I think the New York market deserves to be in the rotation. I don't know that, you know, you want to go as far north as Boston, because I don't think just people care enough for that to work. But, you know, you can get flights in and out of, under normal circumstances, in and out of New York, or train trips in and out of New York, you know, at reasonable prices. It's not cost prohibitive, I don't think, for people to get there, even though the cost of, like, just subsisting and existing and eating in New York can be prohibitive for a lot of people. So yeah, I mean, I think Greensboro, I think DC works. I mean, I think it worked when they went there, and that's another place where you can go in and out. I think Atlanta would be a good place for it. Charlotte, I agree with you. Charlotte's a good town for it. I mean, even Raleigh, you know, certainly that arena is equipped to handle something like that. That could be a location you could do it. So yeah, I mean, something around those five cities. I don't know who I'm forgetting, who's actually in the mix, but that would be what I would do.
Aaron McFarling giving a dream scenario as he's with us here on the Fast Lane, presented by the To-Go Menus at Trio Brick Oven Eatery and Jersey Lilies, Route 460 Orange Avenue and Roanoke Electric Road in Salem. Aaron, you mentioned good news. Do you consider it good news that North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper said today that NASCAR, quote, submitted plans involving social distancing protocol, end quote, and that the Coca-Cola 600 is on track to actually run May 24th? Or are you still very cautiously optimistic about this race, which is just under a month away on the calendar?
Yeah, it's the latter for sure. But hey, you know, some movement is better than no movement. I mean, I think everyone's optimistic or cautiously optimistic about everything. And, you know, you're seeing right now Major League Baseball is more optimistic than it was maybe a week ago that there will actually be something played in baseball this year. And that warms my heart for sure if that were to be the case, even if it's a weird season where nothing makes sense and the, you know, you have to realign teams. And I mean, part of me thinks that actually works better, because then anybody who looks back on it 50 years from now looks at, you know, the Grapefruit League and the Cactus League standings and says, okay, well, that was just kind of a throwaway season. But yeah, back to your question about NASCAR. I mean, I think NASCAR, we've talked about it before, I think they have potential, maybe more than a lot of sports, to be able to do something. You know, I mean, maybe you change your pit crew demands. Maybe you pit under red and you just, you know, let everybody get fresh tires with no time, you know, constraints or penalties or anything like that, and you just keep running. The real, you know, problem I think that we've seen with NASCAR previously is it's a dangerous sport. You know, you don't want, if hospitals are being overrun, you don't want to have to bring in a driver to be cared for because he got in a wreck. And I think some of those concerns about, you know, hospitals being overrun have been allayed thanks to the social distancing that's been done. So, I mean, I can see a scenario where they run a race, and I can see a scenario where people watch it in droves because we're so hungry for something like that on our schedule.
Yeah, I mean, I know I would. And, you know, looking at the NFL draft numbers over the weekend and how 8.5 million people on average viewed it at any time, and it was over 50 million total viewers. I think 55 was the number for the NFL draft. I mean, does that not plant the seed in not just NASCAR's mind, but in all these leagues, once again, of looking for a way to get back, even if it may be sooner than you would expect or sooner than it should be, because clearly there's a consumer demand there, and that's the marketplace talking to people that have often made a living catering to the marketplace.
Sure. I mean, yeah, I mean, I was talking with the Red Sox, the Salem Red Sox general manager last week, and, you know, I think he had it exactly right. That first team that comes out and plays, or that first sport that comes out and plays, is going to be very, very symbolic. It's going to be a symbol of a step back towards normalcy. And, of course, you're right. There is risk to that. And if it were to go wrong, then you become a symbol of rushing. You become a symbol of you know, not considering public health enough as opposed to your own interests. So, yeah, it's a risk for sure to do it. But, yeah, and people want normalcy, man. People want things they know. People, and we're part of that segment, you and I and your listeners right now and my readers, we're part of that segment that nothing will be normal until we see sports again. I mean, nothing at all will be normal. You can open the restaurants. You can open bowling alleys. You can, you know, cut our hair at salons. You can give us massages. But until we see actual athletes on the field competing against each other, this won't be normal, you know, in any sense of the word. So, and I think all the sports leagues understand that. They understand the appetite for it. And they're eager to do it as soon as they can. I mean, I don't think there's anybody that's going to sit out any longer than they need to. And, you know, part of me thinks that's exciting because, you know, that means we could see sports sooner rather than later if people are that eager. But the other part of me, of course, is concerned about the hole and the whole, I guess, ecosystem getting thrown off by another outbreak. So, I mean, they're all balancing these interests and concerns. And, you know, eventually we'll get to a place where we won't have to think about it at all because hopefully there'll be a vaccine and there'll be treatment programs in place and sufficient testing and all that. But until then, there's going to be some risk taken. And as we've seen in the political aspect of this with the governors, you know, certain governors doing different things, sports leagues are the same way. I mean, there's going to be a sports league that is a little more ambitious or risk tolerant than others.
At Aaron McFarling on Twitter. To follow Aaron McFarling, columnist, Roanoke Times and Roanoke.com. Thanks to Trio and Jersey Lilies with us here on the Fast Lane. Aaron, obviously your colleague Mike Nizolik is all over this even more. But when New England took Dalton Keene, former Virginia Tech tight end, third round 2020 NFL draft, did that not, you know, send maybe an alarm bell in your head and go, wonder what they saw in him that Virginia Tech did not?
Well, I mean, I don't think Virginia Tech didn't see anything in him. I mean, Fuente loved the guy. I mean, he's the kind of guy that, you know, sets an example for everyone else with how hard he works and how hard he plays. And you know, sort of his toughness level and all those things are check marks in his box. And he's got physical attributes, too. I mean, he's not nicknamed Rambo for no reason. So, I think there were fans and certainly warranted wondering, you know, why some games that Dalton didn't get used more, wasn't thrown the ball more. But I'm not surprised that somebody took him in the third round. I'm not surprised that it's New England. They like to use tight ends quite a bit. And he's a good one.
Yeah, somebody that left very high impressions on Virginia Tech football players and fans. Somebody who does that for us always on the Fast Lane is Aaron McFarling. Aaron, thank you for your time today as always. Look forward to hopefully having more good news when we chat again here on the Fast Lane.
Sounds good, brother. Let's talk again next week.
It's our pleasure to chat with Aaron McFarling, Roanoke.com. Columnist presented by Trio and Jersey Lilies. When we come back, We'll chat NFL draft, landing spots, and grading those. We'll go over those when we come back on the Fast Lane, as we'll be joined by Matt Miller, Bleacher Report NFL writer. He'll stop by with us on the Fast Lane across the Virginia Talk Radio Network.